All right. So the day was April 12th, and the Washington Capitals are playing the Columbus Blue Jackets in game one of the first round of the playoffs. The Caps get an early lead, two goals. Then eventually that lead just sort of wears off, and the teams are tied at three, and then they go into overtime. And then Panarin wins it, and the Blue Jackets win game one. Then 2 days later, 3 days later, the Capitals do pretty much the exact same thing. The Caps score first. They play great. They're like dominating even strength, but then they blow a lead, and then they go to overtime. And then Matt Calvert wins it. And the Capitals are down 2-0 in the first round of the playoffs. Cut to game three. Basically, the same thing happens again. The Capitals, get a lead. They lose the lead. They get another lead. They lose that lead. They go to overtime. Nothing happens. They go to double overtime. And then the most insane thing happens. Lars Eller crashes the net, scores a goal in overtime, and the Capitals come back. I mean, the team was a bounce away from being down 3-0, essentially a death grip, a guaranteed elimination from the playoffs. And instead, Lars Eller gets that goal in double overtime. The Caps are down 2-1 in the series, end up clawing their way back, winning in six, I believe. And cut to a month and a half later, it's June, and the Washington Capitals, as of right now, are one game short of winning the Stanley Cup championship. Ian, I have no gosh darn idea how we got here.
I don't either. I'm really excited. I don't know. I can't believe we're here. There's no words, you know?
The recaps, the first two recaps are some of the saltiest things I've ever put together on the internet. I mean, there's some blistering stuff about Brooks Orpik, which, by the way, I think I was totally right about. And it's more everything about Brooks Orpik. When people are talking about Brooks Orpik, they're mostly talking about Braden Holtby, and they don't know it. Braden Holtby, who's been a godsend. But all of this salt from early on, I mean, I think everyone sort of saw, hey, the Capitals are playing good. They're just blowing leads, and they're, sucking on the PK, early in the series, that first round series. But, I don't know, the bones were there, and then all of a sudden something changed. And I think that something is the dumbest something possible. I honestly think it was dumb luck. I think the Capitals had the effort all along. And I'm sure we'll have people that'll say post hoc, the Capitals had confidence. They had a swagger that they didn't have before. And I don't think that's the case. I think they've had that swagger in the past. It's just that the bounces tortured them. But it's 2018, and for some reason, James Neal rings the post. Or, Marchessault rings the post. And then the Capitals, a puck just drops into Devontae Smith Pelly's skates. And then, all credit to him, he's a wizard. He kicks it from his skates to his stick and then puts it in the net. Those things just didn't happen in 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017. Those things only happen. Oh, and also 2018. I forgot that one. Those things, 2008, I'm sorry. Those things only happen right now. And I guess that's how you build a championship. You have fundamentals, you have a good cohesive team unit, and then you just get insanely lucky. That's how championships are made, right?
I guess so. I guess so. I have something that I've been thinking about. And because I went to practice on Saturday, I interviewed a couple of the guys. I was in the locker room, and it was just so loud that you could barely think because there's just so many media people, all famous, which was weird, just rubbing elbows with oh, there's all the NHL.com guys. And oh, there's a guy from NBCSN that's on TV.
Bar for famous is so low, Ian.
But I was.
It's Anson Carter. Oh, my gosh.
No, but no, we would have yelled at each other about analytics because he believes in plus minus or whatever. But but anyways, all the guys were just smiling and so happy. And Orlov was just grinning ear to ear. Tom Wilson was just looking around I can't believe all these people are in here. And at the end of the media session, I talked to Jay Beagle for a minute, and he was just making jokes with me. And I've been in the locker room a lot, and there's always been this slight dreariness, but it just seems like they're really, really enjoying things. And I mean, that's almost kind of obvious that it's a Stanley Cup final, but I think the whole time they've just been really loose. And I have an example, and it's going to be completely arbitrary and probably doesn't prove anything. But for me, I think sometimes optimism or positivity can really change a team. And I think this year, you know, they never really got down on themselves. And so on Saturday, I went to practice. Everyone was there. I was really happy just because the team was in the Stanley Cup final. It was really cool to see how many people were at Kettler. I saw a bunch of friends. I met Ovi the Bulldog. I got in an argument with Alan May and hugged him. I'm just kidding about the argument. But, you know, I saw so many people that I knew. And a lot of the, you know, a couple players asked me about Ethan, and I didn't even know how they knew. And it was just, it was fun. It was wonderful. And I had such a good day. I hung out with Kara some. And like, the next day when I played hockey, I slept maybe 2 or 3 hours. And I looked down at my Fitbit, and we always play 3 hours. And I had run 11 miles. And I scored 7 goals that day. And it just didn't make any sense because the previous like 6 or 7 weeks, I played ball hockey. And the previous 6 or 7 weeks, I scored once. And I usually run about six or seven miles every time. So there was something going on with me where I just had so much enthusiasm and so much happiness, and I just didn't get tired. I just had this unending, you know, motor, so to speak. And these are intangibles, and these you can't really quantify. And, you know, I'm always leery of them. But that game that I had on Sunday kind of came out of nowhere for me, and I don't understand it. But I see a lot of the same types of things in this team, is that they're getting bounces, they're having confidence, they're not worrying about anything, they're just having fun. And I think as soon as they got through that Pittsburgh series, I think they had a lot of confidence going into that Pittsburgh series. But once they won it, I don't think anything was going to stop them.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. I'm always so, there's a line to be drawn between confidence and success. And I'm not sure in which direction it goes. And I'm not sure if it's a straight line or a squiggly line, except I'm lying. I'm very sure it's a squiggly line that stops in other places. Nonetheless, the point you made about positivity is the salient one. And that's the topic of this week's Rush Machine Podcast. Thank you so much.
And now it's time for the RMNB Podcast.
This episode of the Rush Machine Podcast comes to you thanks in part to our pals at Capital One. Capital One, as you probably know, are the naming sponsors of the Capital One Arena, at which location you can get 10% off if you use your Capital One card. You can get into the place a little early, which is pretty rad, and you get 20% off at the store. I have a Capital One card. It's got my dear departed Bulldog Emmy on it, and it's somewhere lost in this apartment. And I really would like it if I can find it. Luckily, I've loaded it up on my phone so I can use it there. Anyway, thank you to Capital One for making that happen. And if you're going to get, I'm a Papa John's guy when I go to Capital One Arena. I know that'll surprise folks who hear me make fun of Papa John's pizza on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. But it would be good to get, you know, 10% off that bad boy. Plus, when I get my Bud Light Lime, which Peter, I guess is what I drink.
Oh, Peter, yeah. I'm judging you right now.
When I get my heartburn fuel, I like to get take a dime off each dollar on that beer you get. So thank you so much. And so in the history of hockey teams being up 3-1 in the Stanley Cup final, there's like one example in the last century of a team coming back from it. That said, the team that's in these finals is the Washington Capitals. And as confident as I'm supposed to be, and you know, like in the last few games, I've been like pointing at like the win percentage as like the score evolves, and I'd be like, no, don't worry about it. It's a 98% win percentage. Oh, they got to go back. Oh well, now it's 97.6%. I know what those numbers are, and my rational brain rejects it, and I'm still thinking, okay, here's what happens: the Capitals, you know, lose Game 5 on the road. That's a good thing because it'll keep Ovechkin from, partying his skull out in Vegas. But then they come back to Washington, they lose there. Then everyone's talking about it, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, game seven. And I could totally see this going to seven games, even though it's on the verge there. I don't know. What do you think? And maybe just tell me I'm being irrational and I need to just relax a little bit.
You know, part of me has the same thing where you're just like, I'm not going to let myself say the words. I'm just going to say big silver shiny thing. So I'm not even going to say it. Like, I'm not even going to say what the next step is. So I feel it too. If there's any team that could blow a 3-1 Stanley Cup final lead, meet the Capitals. Cause they could, you know, I could just see that happening, but I don't know the way they're playing again, the confidence and, you know, they said all the right things after the last game. It's another to actually meet the challenge of what the Golden Knights are going to bring on Thursday night. And that might be really tough, especially with that crowd and how good Vegas is at home. I think they were practically undefeated at home during the postseason until they ran into the Caps. So,
the 3-game losing streak that Vegas is on right now is also their longest of the entire season. Like they've never lost more than 3 games in a row.
That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, they're just a really good team.
Like when I see like what's going on, you know, the Capitals, and the thing that's like surprised everybody is that they've held 3 powerhouse 5-on-5 teams to like even, you know, Columbus, Pittsburgh, and Tampa. Those were 3 really good teams. Pittsburgh took some time to get going, but those are all 3 really good, you know, puck possession teams, and the Capitals outplayed them hands down. Like, you know, and late in the series, I think, especially in like a playoff series, there's things that change about the game sort of mechanically, which is unfortunate, but it happens. And like one of those things is like blocking shots. The Capitals, especially, I think I'd have the exact numbers on this somewhere, but they've increased their like block rate by about 5 percentage points, which is important. And I think probably the most important thing is that the Capitals have increased their overall possession from somewhere significantly south of 50% to right about 50%, maybe a little bit over. That said, Vegas is the only team I've seen in the playoffs so far that really is winning the territory battle. But the Capitals are doing something that reminds me most of what Pittsburgh did to the Capitals last year, which is counterpunching, where you're getting fewer attempts, but those attempts are more dangerous. And I don't just mean that they're getting a high shooting percentage, which is probably something that was true of both the Capitals and of this year and of Pittsburgh last year, but that when they get those chances, they're in the crease. The Capitals are, you know, I could think of, you know, 2 just in game 4 alone, especially like Devontae Smith-Pelly's and TJ Oshie's shot attempts from just way up in the piece there. And I worry a little bit that that's fundamentally unsound over a long stretch of time. But at the same time, I actually don't care because we don't have a long stretch of time ahead of us. I was making a joke when I was, you know, tweeting out the game recap last night. It's like, we, you know, there's some disturbing trends about the Corsi and the zone starts that we really need to talk about. And of course, we don't need to talk about it. What we have left is somewhere between 1 and 8 goals left in the NHL season to determine who wins the Stanley Cup. That's all that really matters. And when it comes down to, we're really 2 fellas above all else, Marc-Andre Fleury and Braden Holtby. So I'm finally at the point with a sample size somewhere between, you know, 60 and 180 minutes of hockey left, ready to put you know, the analytics behind us and just say, all right, put the puck in the net, guys.
That's nice, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's horrible. But it has been just so delightful to watch Marc-Andre Fleury just crumble into dust. Dude, there was no goal. We talked about this. He's so below average. I mean, cumulatively for this whole postseason, he's still 93%, which is awesome. That's a decent Braden Holtby postseason. But in this series, I think he's probably below 88% saving. Like 12% of the cap shots, you take, you know, 5 shots and at least one of those is, that math is horrible. Just ignore those numbers I just said there. But I mean, the Caps are shooting above 10% against Vegas, which is amazing. And if the Caps are putting 30 shots on net, that means that the Caps are going to have about 3 goals and it's hard to win. That means that Vegas has to score 3 goals too, and Braden Holtby ain't allowing that. If you want a statement from the Washington Capitals, you want to have Braden Holtby, you know, effectively shutting down what he can. He had that one just boner of a misplay to give Nosek that goal in game three.
That was vintage Holtby. If you watched him play in Hershey, he's one of those guys that is just very aggressive with the puck because he can be. And when he's feeling really confident, sometimes he can just have those awful plays where he'll just like try to go up the middle or try to do something fancy and it'll just bite him in the rear. And the funny part was, is he hasn't done that pretty much all year. I don't remember the last time he's made one of those horrible mental gaffes with a turnover handling the puck. So
the thing that made Holtby hockey poison between like December and March was the really dangerous shots that the Capitals defense was just incapable of stopping. But like, he wasn't getting burned on what people call the soft ones. And I know maybe people may like disagree with that, but damn it, I did the research. So like, whereas Marc-Andre Fleury literally did an own goal. He took a shot that was not a shot, put it in his skate, and then moved his skate towards the net. And then the puck went over the line, and then Tom Wilson got credit for a goal, which is my perfect universe. It's just the most frustrating thing for people that hate the Caps, hate Tom Wilson, love Marc-Andre Fleury. Deal with that highlight. That's what you need. And then on top of that, you got Evgeny Kuznetsov, who is producing at a rate unheard of in this era, unless you play in Pittsburgh. Like, if you're not Malkin or Crosby, no one, you know, in the last decade does what Evgeny Kuznetsov is doing right now. What he's doing right now, like I put the numbers up earlier, but these are Lemieux numbers. These are Gretzky numbers for the playoffs. Those production rates, those are it's unspeakable how good he is. And I think we may be understating how solid of a case he has for the Conn Smythe, unless the Caps lose. Oh God! or a sentimental case is made for Alex Ovechkin and Brayden Holtby. To wit, I say, I have a ton of time for that. You know, like I think like the Conn Smythe is chosen by three schmucks from Nova Scotia, Prince Edward Island. So it's going to be ridiculous. You know, Crosby won it last year, or last year or 2 years ago, I can't remember, instead of Kessel, and Kessel definitely should have won it. That was, you know, a misplay in my reading of it. So I wouldn't be surprised. I won't be upset as long as it goes to a person who plays for the Washington sports team.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, if Ovechkin wins, I'm totally cool with that. But again, I don't want to even really talk about Conn Smythe either, because that's just way, like, I'm imagining someone accepting a, you know, I'm imagining after the game is over, and that's just too far for me. I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. I just
listen, no. I'm with you.
I can't do it. I just won't.
I've noticed you did something that I also did, where we've been getting some messages about people asking about parades.
Yeah, I got so mad,
and we're just like, nope, not this doesn't. And then like today, there was some news out of New York Islanders where they finally fired Garth Snow, and I'm sure they want to pay him out because he had some crazy deal, and they fired their head coach Doug Waite, and that means that all of a sudden, you know, the NHL, which was did not have any coaching vacancies, now has one in a very particular club that has Lou Lamoriello running the shots, and they've got John Tavares probably for next year. They're a team that's probably going to be loading up. They're going to get a goaltender probably. Like, there's a very attractive spot for a head coach and GM, I think, depending on what kind of role Lamoriello wants. And I mean, that could have an impact on the Capitals, but I'm not going to talk about it. Not going to talk about Barry Trotz. Not going to talk about John Carlson's next contract. Those are off-season things. I'm not going to talk about a trip to the White House. Holy crap, am I not going to talk about that?
Oh God, I didn't even think about that. Oh, that's going to make Ian, that's melt.
That's all I can think about, but I'm not talking about it. Ian, Putin, it's going to be an S show. Anyway, but we're not allowed to talk about
Russian
those things.
Russian collusion! Sorry.
The only thing we have right now is a hockey game on Thursday night, and maybe a hockey game on, what is it, Saturday? Would it be Saturday after that, or would it be Sunday?
Yeah, Saturday.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
You know, I want to talk about Kuznetsov really quick about, you know, I don't want to talk necessarily about the trophy, but just how well he's been playing. The stat that that got unearthed for me that kind of blew my mind was that he was the first player in the Stanley Cup final to record 4 assists since Joe Sakic in 1996. So my two favorite players growing up were Sakic and Scott Niedermeyer, and then later Ole Kolzig. And I remember I watched all the Colorado Avalanche games. When I recently talked to Mike Knuble in our last podcast, I asked him a lot about those fights between Detroit and Colorado, because those were some of the first things I experienced as a hockey fan. And I remember them vividly. And I remember how well Sakic was in the Stanley Cup final. And her comment that I don't think we're completely, you know, completely understanding how good Evgeny Kuznetsov is playing is completely correct. And I think Trott said it today in his interview with the press, that his light is a little bit dimmed because of Ovechkin. You know, Ovechkin gets so much of the spotlight, as he should. But it's how he's played and how Tom Wilson has played. This line was not good at even strength for most of the year. And then in the playoffs, it's just, as soon as they put Tom Wilson on that line, the consistency, the speed at which they play, they have space. You know, Wilson has turned himself into a dangerous player. He still does dumb stuff, but he's doing it less.
Now, what do you mean by dangerous? Specify dangerous for me there.
breaking jaws. And no, I'm just kidding. No, I think he's become a little bit more of a dangerous player because of how he can go to the slot and just wait for passes and things like that. Like, I think he has confidence that he knows he's going to get the puck in a dangerous scoring area. So if he actually runs plays and cycles and goes to exactly where he needs to be, or if he finishes a check and knocks someone over and creates that space, he just skates and goes off. I think he just has so much confidence in playing with Ovechkin and Kuznetsov that he's turned into an even more productive player.
I think you're right on. Like that goal in game three, mm-hmm. where I think it was game three, where Wilson and Kuznetsov and Ovechkin had that offensive zone face off. And then Kuznetsov and Ovechkin and Wilson do that really fast cycle. And then Wilson just sort of funnels to the net and Kuznetsov's like, yep, I'll find you there. Boom, in. And then what you're talking about, neutral, that one play. I think it was the last game. I think it was game seven against Tampa. It was the opening goal, you know, like a minute and change in. Wilson has a big open ice hit. And then box the puck loose, and then it's a rush goal. Like, those are two quintessential plays that you want, that really, I think, shows genuine chemistry between that mm-hmm. trio of players. And it's probably something that wouldn't be happening if it were Ovechkin, Backstrom, Wilson. They might get something different, but they wouldn't get those kinds of plays. And it's definitely not something we would get out of Ovi, either of the top two centers, and Oshie. Not to put down Oshie, because I think he's been amazing in this postseason, but I think that the Ovi, Kuznetsov, and Wilson line is something special.
Yeah, it's a playoff. It's a playoff line. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to go up against them.
One thing that really surprised me is that Ovechkin is actually hitting less in these playoffs than he has in previous playoffs. He really is. But I think that those hits have been more impactful because it seems like they're creating rush attempts. Mm-hmm. I think it's just something about, I mean, the Caps just aren't nearly as good on the, I mean, I guess this, you can see like a hit increasing as a player's on ice possession goes down, because you can only get a hit if the other team has the puck, and the Ovechkin line is starting the offensive zone a lot, and they have a much inferior breakout than they had last season when they had Schmidt taking it for his ice time, and now they've, I think they got Kempney, who's pretty darn good at it as well. But I think the necessities of the game have made it so that Ovechkin doesn't have to hit as much, but when he does, we have turnovers, and those turnovers lead to chances. And I would suspect, and I don't have evidence for this, that they're more impactful than they have been in the past. And I think Wilson and Ovechkin on the line just makes them miserable to play against, which is, I think, part of the reason why Gerard Gallant got the Marchessault line away from Ovechkin after games one and two, and has been using the Hall line against him. Which ultimately led to them, you know, Perron getting scratched from game four, which is probably a terrible move, although I understand why they did it. But it's like if last season when Evgeny Kuznetsov and Marcus Johansson and Justin Williams were on that second line and they were just shadowing the opponent top line all the time, like they were going against Crosby, and they really did shut him down during 5-on-5. It was, you know, a huge effort. They did the same thing against the Austin Matthews line in the first Toronto series last year. And then, your expectations for their own production goes down. Because you're like, oh no, they're sort of being a checking line. They've got defensive assignments, as you do in the playoffs, where things are much more head to head, and you know, like a chess game. Except Gallant, you know, put Halla and Perron against, the Caps top line, against Kuznetsov's line, and Kuznetsov is owning them, and then Gallant sort of doubles down on shooting himself in the foot by having by pulling Perron from game four. We saw something pretty similar happen with John Cooper in his matchups in the second series, in the third series with Tampa. I don't want to say it in too stark terms, but I feel like Barry Trotz is out coaching his opposition. Maybe if only because the coaches are doing some pretty boneheaded stuff in matchups against Ovechkin. I think the defensive stuff has been, really good. Schmidt has done a really good job against Ovechkin for a few games, but we saw him, cracking through in game three. So I don't know. I guess I'm saying all credit to Barry Trotz.
Yeah. And the coaching staff, who knows how much they're sharing the load there or what the actual setup is. And I don't know why I'm saying that, but I feel like I need to say it for some reason.
We're not talking about the off season, but yeah, we're not talking about it, but we're not talking about how tumultuous it would be if Barry Trotz gets extended and then loses his coaching staff for some reason, his assistant coach. That's not a topic.
Or imagine if they win the Stanley Cup and then he doesn't return. I mean, which they at no point has Brian McClellan said anything even remotely close to confidence behind him, which is hilarious to me that they managed to do all of this with.
And that'd be an interesting topic if we were talking about it, but we're not.
We're gonna table that. And I had something I wanted to ask you was that, while we're on the topic of Wilson, I think Wilson has been one of those guys, if you're talking about MVPs, like the MVP of the Capitals that maybe hasn't gotten his due, I look at Wilson, I look at Dmitry Orlov, there's just so many guys who have played such great, quiet hockey where you really have to look to see what they're doing. But when you look, you're like, oh my gosh, this is just such great hockey. Like Wilson is I remember back, you talked about some of his plays where he would check a guy, he'd force a turnover, then he'd do this blind backhand pass to the to neutral to find Kuzi or Ovechkin. He had four or five goals where he created just by creating turnovers in an offensive zone and just chipping the puck out and it being an accurate, amazing pass. I'm sure when they go over film and look over certain plays, things that Dmitry Orlov have done where guys will challenge him and he just pokes the puck away and gets it and they are going the other side quickly. I think I've just been amazed by some of the role players and how well they play. Chandler Stephenson has come out of nowhere. Jacob Verana, I mean, he really should be getting top 6 minutes, consistently.
Yeah.
And
the thing, go ahead.
And you just look at how much success they're having from, you look at Lars Eller and how guys go down and then he has the best games of the playoffs. A lot of this stuff doesn't make sense, but then it does too, because, in years past, we thought this team had a lot of depth and then it didn't show up for some reason when it mattered. But this year, there's just this jive from top to bottom. You look at Beagle. He's been, in a lot of ways, if you look at shot attempt analytics, horrible. Just horrible. Devontae Smith-Pelly, horrible. Just downright bad. But then they block big shots in big moments. They score huge goals in big moments. The goal the other night where Devontae Smith-Pelly scored again right in front of the net because Beagle, where Beagle chases down a guy who's way faster than him, forces a turnover, and then finds DSP in the slot. Those kind of things are not lost on me. That's wanting it. You know what I mean? That's Beagle is turning up the jets, is turning up the, his intensity. And he sees an area where he could probably be aggressive and go for it. And it's just been working out for them. There's no way to really put into words Jay Beagle. You know what I mean? He's been so good. He's a playoff player. Tom Wilson is a playoff player.
Yeah, let me take a try at it though.
So
Jay Beagle scoring on about 30% of his shots. The other team has the puck 70% of the time when Jay Beagle's on the ice. He's got 6 points in the playoffs, and that's awesome. Two goals, four assists, but that the Caps have only outscored their opponent by two when Beagle's on the ice, which is not for nothing. But a lot of that should be credited to the goaltender behind him. Whereas Devontae Smith-Pelly has had five goals in the playoffs, but he's still underwater Like the opponent does better than the Caps do when Devontae Smith-Pelly's on the ice. And that's despite having amazingly lucky numbers. Like these, I think you made like a good point, because like Tom Wilson has done these things tremendously well because he's been put in this circumstance where he succeeds. And we've seen tons and tons of evidence that Tom Wilson with fourth line minutes or third line minutes just sort of wallows, just sort of, you know, gets into fights, doesn't really create anything, looks frustrated and ends up hurting people. And then when he gets on the top line, he's creative and he still hurts people, but he's, you know, scoring goals and he's getting suspended, so hopefully he'll fix that behavior. Chandler Stephenson, I think, has been atrocious and has been in credit for things that I don't necessarily see, except in the moments when he's been asked to step up in the same way that Eller has. They have these really compelling incidents of playing excellent when they have the opportunity to do so, but the Capitals organizational structure has kept him out of those circumstances. You know, there's a player who played one game of the playoffs, got an assist, played just an amazing game, transformed the Caps bottom six, and never played again in the playoffs. That's Nathan Walker. Like these are not cases of players stepping it up. These are cases of players who've been held back by their circumstances. And then some of these are cases of players who are just being distorted by the funhouse mirror of random chance. Mm-hmm. Like Jake Beagle has the toughest assignments of any forward in the NHL. So we should assume that he gets outshot, and we should assume that he should get outscored. And the fact that he's not should go back to the guy we mentioned at the top of the podcast, Braden Holtby, who's been amazing. Anyway, like I don't want to take that away from anything, but like, I don't know. I like Chandler Stephenson. I think he'll be a great fourth line center next year, which we're not allowed to talk about. Tom Wilson has found his new niche, and he should stay there for as long as he can and maybe not injure people. Jay Beagle is very lucky. Devontae Smith-Pelly is very lucky. That's really all. I mean, it's a huge thing that they've done, but it doesn't overwhelm, it doesn't hardwire my brain to not see what's happening. These guys are getting lucky beyond words.
I think that both of our perspectives, when heard individually, it's like they level each other a little bit. And I agree with you that I think that they are lucky, but I do think that there is something to them being able to take advantage of these moments. You know what I mean? Like, I just remember, I think it was last game or it was the game before in game three where just Beagle goes down there, and he did it. He's done it a few times in the series. And I look back at his stats, his points per game stats always tick up in the playoffs. And I don't understand that at all. You know what I mean?
Percentage. This is a good conversation. We're going to have to pick it up next time.
Sure.
And next time may be a whole different tone for the podcast based on what happens in game five. But, I don't know. We've got a big couple days ahead of us here, and stay strong, my friend.
You too. And remember, call it the Big Silver Shiny Thing.
That'll be the name of the podcast. Big Silver Shiny Thing. Take care, friends. Talk to you next time.
All right. Bye.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.